Purple Lights, your podcast home for SFA sports talk. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SFA Sawmill or check us out at www.sfasawmill.com. Be sure to subscribe here so you don't miss an episode of Purple Lights. And now for the latest happenings on Lumberjacks and Lady Jacks, here's Isaac and Richard. Axum Jacks.
Welcome, Lumberjack fans. We are back with Purple Lights, your podcast for SFA Sports, and it is the postmortem for the Mississippi State opening game of the Lumberjack season. I'm Richard Boyer, and with me is Isaac Niedrauer.
Hi, Rich. It's good to see you. It was a little bit of a rough night last night, but nothing that we didn't expect, I suppose.
No, I think we accurately summed it up last week when we said we're really not going to know much about this team until after the third game, and game one kind of went as we expected. I rewatched the game this morning just to kind of come off the ledge a little bit, and I did in a lot of ways. And we were accurate in saying, you know, your point to the difference being the offensive line and defensive line, and I think that completely showed itself last night.
Yeah, because I think we saw flashes of talent that looked kind of impressive, and that's ridiculous in a 63-6 game. That, by the way, if you've been under a rock the last 24 hours, that was the final score: Mississippi State 63, Stephen F. Austin 6, on two field goals courtesy of
Storm Ruiz. Yeah. 36 and a 33. That part looked all right.
Yeah, and they missed one, so there's one aspect of the game that we won, but the big plays were what got him last night, and we talked about that a little bit just a few minutes ago. The fact of the matter is Mississippi State, they didn't have to sustain drives because they were striking so quickly. And a lot of that I felt like had to do with the fact that Stephen F. Austin, who is not a blitzing team, in fact, their identity last year was not blitzing, but dropping into coverage, really changed that up a lot in this game, just trying to get some pressure of any kind at all. And in doing so, there was just so many holes in the back end of their defense.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Mississippi State quarterback Thompson got touched last night, much at all, except when he was maybe running the ball. But it was tough to get through that. And then on the offensive side, I mean, look, Mississippi State's going to have three or four of their defensive players that played most of the, if not all of the first half. Those guys are going to be playing the NFL soon. So. It was to be expected that they were going to struggle on that. Little disappointed that SFA isn't quite up to speed on the uniform rules for this year.
Right.
That was a little frustrating, and really coming out of the gate before the deluge of rain that passed through, it looked a little bit like a little deer caught in the headlights. SFA just. I don't know if they weren't ready to play or they just looked like the moment was getting to them a little bit.
Well, we can start with the bad and then maybe talk about the good. And I think the bad, you said, really was the first 10 minutes of the game because the score wasn't the problem. At the end of the day, whether it's Mississippi State or SMU or Texas Tech or Kansas State, or if I go on this long list of all the FBS teams they played over the last, it doesn't matter who they're playing. This is what we expect. TCU would be the other one. So not the score that was really the problem, but really when by the time Mississippi State went up 21-0, you already had a whiff tackle on the first touchdown, which was just a guy that was in position and just didn't make the tackle. You had two receivers that collided and nearly caused a turnover, but ended the first drive for SFA. You had missed assignments on a block. You had the uniform violation from the punter, and then another one later on. These were all self-inflicted wounds that had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Mississippi State is an SEC team that's supposed to hammer you on national TV. Those were all self-inflicted indicators of A, they're not ready to play, or B, that they're just overwhelmed by the moment and the cowbells, and I'm sure it was a combination of both.
Yeah. And now, again, SFA scored 6 points. Would have been nice to get a touchdown, and thought that they looked on a couple different occasions like they could.
Gorey caught it.
Yeah,
we agree on that one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And if you guys didn't see the game, Tyrion Gorey catches a ball, clearly catches it down at the 1 yard line, and it was called incomplete. They go and review it again, and they uphold the call, which not even the ESPN announcers agreed with. And it would have been an interesting call, fourth and one on the one of what you know Jeff Bird does. I mean, I think we both think that they go for it at that point.
I think so. You're already down at that point, 21-0. So
now, what do you run when running up the middle just got you losses after losses all night? I think they found a couple once, especially when they got to the backups, they were able to run the ball a little bit. But all in all, you know, it was a rough night. You know, I was hoping they wouldn't give up quite that many points, but yeah. I think the only concerning thing, it wasn't surprising that the defensive line wasn't pressuring the quarterback. What you mentioned, missed tackles and just a couple of completely blown coverages where, you know, it could have been Houston Baptist would have scored on a couple of those plays with a receiver wide open with no one guarding him, you know, no one covering him at all. So, you know, they didn't take SEC talent to, you know, when you don't have anyone within 20 yards of you to catch it and run in the end zone. So those are things that, again, first game, you can, you know, you think you might be able to fix that, especially if you are going up against a team where you can pressure the quarterback and maybe, you know, maybe he just doesn't have the time to get those.
I think that's the key right there, is being able to pressure the quarterback with three down linemen, because that's what they want to do. That's the way this defensive scheme is built, and that's what Jeff Bird came to Nacogdoches to run last year, was the idea that you don't bring extra men. You don't even bring four most of the time. Bring three up front. Maybe trade that out for a linebacker that comes in, and then you've got the ability to play zone in the back. You guard it. You don't give up the big play, which is really the opposite of what they did last night. They did play the zone last night. They just had no clue what they were doing, and it was just – they were lost. I mean, I think the first long touchdown that they gave up on the one play, you had two players that clearly each thought they had the same assignment, yep. And there's a little hitch that comes in, and they both go undercut that route, and someone just flies 20 yards in the clear behind them. And I don't know that – you know, certainly against Tarleton next weekend, but – even in the Southland Conference schedule, I think you're not going to see anything close to the offensive line that Mississippi State put out there.
No, you're definitely not. You think that you'll be able to control the line of scrimmage. You should have, although I did see Tarleton's got one guy, one offensive lineman that rolls at 390. But you think you might have some quickness edge over somebody like that. But you think they might be able to control the offensive and defensive lines a little more than what we saw against Mississippi State. But as we said, we would talk about the bad and then kind of roll into bright spots or silver linings or whatever you would like to call it.
It was good. There was some good last night. Some legitimate good and a 63-6 loss.
Clearly, Foster Sawyer should be and is the starting quarterback for this team. And when he was not running for his life or getting, you know, blasted by a bulldog, didn't look terrible. The stats don't show it because there was a lot of passes where he was throwing it away because you know, there was they were blitzing a lot and he was running for his life for a lot of that first half. But when there was time, He threw pretty good balls and did not look bad at all.
He didn't turn it over.
No interceptions. There was one interception by Jake Blumrick in the second half, but we did get to see all three SFA quarterbacks yesterday.
Yeah, so let's talk about the quarterbacks for a minute. So I think we agree, Foster Sawyer right now. I put this on Twitter last night, you know, when they were down, you know, already 40 points. I'm thinking, man, for such a beatdown, Foster Sawyer sure looks sharp tonight.
Yeah.
And that's really the reality. Now, yes, the stats aren't going to show. He completed 10 of 27, so just barely over a third. But he was accurate, and he was decisive. And you could tell when he was throwing it away or when he was trying to hit somebody. And take the first two drives out of the equation when there just nothing was – they couldn't even complete a screen pass. He was looking down the field. He was standing in the face of an onslaught of pressure.
Yeah,
and he was doing what he was maybe the single player. He and a couple receivers, Goree for sure, Tamrick Pace in it too, that looked like that moment was not too big for them.
Right,
and they really held their heads high.
I thought and it'd be, I mean, somebody watching the film could, you know, count up how many times he delivered the ball with really the intention of completing it.
Right.
And wasn't just throwing it to not take a sack. And so, I mean, I would think at least 7 of those 27 were run for your life, throw it out of bounds, throw it, you know, just to save. So then that takes that percentage, makes it a little more realistic of what the balls he was actually intending and attempting to complete did. Now, there was some drops
in there, too.
There were some drops. There was some miscommunications where he threw the ball, the receiver had gone a different way.
Or tripped over another one's ankles.
That's actually a pretty great play when you have a crossing pattern and the defensive back pushes your receiver into the other receiver. That's
you're supposed to pick the defender, is not the other way around.
That was a veteran SEC move there. But I thought, you know, you don't ever want a game where you have 10 kickoff returns because that means the other team's scoring a lot.
Yeah.
But the kickoff return game against those guys was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah,
I was okay with that.
You didn't see any, you know, blatant terrible, you know, running it out of the back of the end zone when you shouldn't have, and those weren't that bad.
And they gave, you know, multiple guys an opportunity.
Yes, so they did, they had decent starting field positions.
Oglesby, Ward, and McGowan each got turns. It was all right. Nothing spectacular in the return game, but sometimes you don't necessarily need that. You just want consistency. And
now, I will say this: the Mississippi State started their backup quarterback because their starter was suspended.
Right.
I almost think SFA would have done better against that starter. And I know this guy's a potential
Heisman
NFL player.
Yeah.
I get that, but he's not a runner like this guy was. And the backup Thompson is a better runner. And I think with only that 3-man rush, like you said, I think they do better against a drop back quarterback than they do against a runner. And they ran that option over and over, where I don't think Mississippi State runs that option.
I think that's actually a pretty valid point. I don't know. There's no way to know for sure what would have happened. I mean, obviously, Thompson completed just 13 of a 31.
Yeah.
But those 13 completions went for 364 yards and five touchdowns. And then he ran for two more. So,
right.
You know, he had himself a night for sure. And I don't know that he's going to have that against Kansas State, but... Well, no. He won't be playing next weekend, but if he was, I don't think he'd be quite putting that together.
Just a little prediction for next week, though. I tell you what, that Mississippi State beats Kansas State by 21 points. That's how good I think they are. And
well, let's give it a day. Vegas might agree with you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's true. That's true because those of you who didn't see all the scores, Kansas State struggled to beat South Dakota yesterday. And while I think, you know, they'll be better than they were last week, that defensive line for Mississippi State, boy, you don't just put them up against anyone in the SEC. Anyone in the nation, you know, those guys can compete.
So let's talk about quarterbacks for a minute. We talked about Sawyer, who I thought looked really good. Josh Covey, when they actually gave him the green light to throw, the defense was backing off a little bit. This was kind of in trash time late in the fourth quarter, but he looked sharp.
Yeah.
Who did not look sharp was Jake Blumrick. And I'm of the belief at this point, now I get it, it's against Mississippi State, but I'm of the belief pretty strongly at this point that if Jake Blumrick sees the field this year, that your season's so far off the rails that it's over.
So, and while we're talking about, if we're just talking about quarterback play, 1 year apart, I feel a little better going into game two than I did against SMU last year, even though the score wasn't as bad. Because of what we did see out of Foster Sawyer, I think there's more to look forward to than what we saw when Sawyer got hurt and Blumrick looked awful.
Now, here's
SMU.
The key. Here's the point, though, that should be made is people think about the Abilene Christian game as the game where Foster Sawyer went down. But right. most people forget he was playing with a knee injury
yes.
that season at the beginning, too, where he hurt himself that summer.
Right.
So Foster Sawyer, coming off an ACL injury, is more healthy today than he was a year ago playing his first game as a Lumberjack.
Yeah,
and it was visible. You could yep. see him planting on that foot and throwing down the field with some authority, and we didn't see that at all last season.
No, he was throwing off his heel a lot, probably because it just wasn't there to plant like his. I didn't like seeing him take some of the shots he took last night. Only a couple of them were you know, those were major shots, but
yeah.
But he hopped right up and just, you know, little cross your fingers cringe every time he'd you know, get crushed in there, which I think what we saw, it was only sacked five times.
Only five times. Yeah.
But I mean,
he took a lot of hits though.
But I also think there was a few where he scrambled and jumped to the line of scrimmage where it doesn't go as a sack. So
yeah, I think he for sure got sacked three times, and there was four in the game. I don't remember one of those. That fourth might have been on a different quarterback.
Okay,
but they also credited a couple of his tackles behind the line of scrimmages as rushing attempts for negative yards, which at that point is just a scoring technicality. I think Sawyer technically ran three times for negative 23 yards. So you could call those a couple more sacks.
Right, right.
But they had a rough go from a protection standpoint. And, of course, the biggest question mark on this team is that right there. And it's not fair to judge them against Mississippi State.
Nope, you're right.
If there was one question you wanted to have answered, you said we'd learn nothing more about this team. For the most part, that's true, because that's the question. We already knew they could play the receiver game and they could probably run the ball, and they had the ability to play with talented, you know, skill position players. But with a real question about this team is what they did up front. And they're going to be playing against Nicholls State, that manhandled Kansas's front line last night. Which, again, we've talked about, may not be saying that much. But Nicholls did the same thing a year ago to Texas A&M. This is not out of character for them. And that may be for the conference championship when all said and done by the end of the year.
Now, I think if you didn't like Cowbells when we play McNeese, you certainly didn't like it yesterday against Mississippi State. But the Southland looked pretty good. And if you kind of look at the you know, no one's going to – yeah. No one expected SFA to, you know, come out of this with a victory, so no one's really going to look at it as, boy, SFA's no good this year because they got beat bad by Mississippi State. But you look around at some of the ways the other teams in the conference played, Central Arkansas playing competitive, but then losing to Tulsa. You know, McNeese beating a Division II school. Sam didn't play yesterday.
Right.
And but then you did have Nicholls beating a Big 12 school. And, you know, I think when SFA put Mississippi State on the schedule, they weren't very good. I think that was probably 5 years ago or something like that.
Seems to be a theme, right? Because
yeah,
SMU was...
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I mean, you think you're scheduling somebody you can compete with potentially, and then they get good. So I think, yeah, like I said, there were some bright spots, some competitive games with Southland teams, which is, you know, good for the conference, you know, good for whoever's going to be the eventual conference champion, because it gives them more legitimate, you know, placement when you get to the playoffs. But when I say we won't know much about this team until game three, the only hedge on that is, if Tarleton doesn't go well, then you may know on the negative. You
right.
aren't going to know much yeah. on the positive until game three. But if they don't, if they don't take care of business and you know, perform well against Tarleton, it could be a long year.
Or you could beat them 63-6, and maybe we'll say that's an okay.
yeah. Well, you know what? If you have fixed the things that we saw needed to be fixed, then you can say, well, they're definitely headed the right direction.
So maybe the last point on this game, and we can look ahead a little bit, would be offense, because if there's something we did learn a little bit, maybe, and again, this is a maybe because of the opponent, and they're obviously going to game plan a little bit differently when they know they've just got a minute, you know, a mere seconds before they're coming barreling in on the quarterback. This offense looked very different last night, and it was one of the points that we've discussed is what would they look like.
Right.
Now, we don't know. This might be the offense that Clint Conk put in last spring. I don't know when there was an offensive coordinator change. Or this could be the creation of
Barbie
and Moses. But regardless, what we saw last night looked very much like a traditional pro-style offense. There was a play-action game. There was a tight end passing game who, by the way, the other big bright spot I thought last night was Alan Arcelles, who came back from his injuries last year to make a couple big catches in the game and looked like a real receiving threat from the tight end, which SFA they hasn't had in years. Nope. I mean, maybe ever. So and Will Taylor was great for what he did, but he wasn't a big receiving threat. I think he caught his only touchdown of his career his senior year, in fact. But
yeah, you can't remember a tight end really being a factor for the foreseeable past.
But the intermediate passing game that we saw last night is really something that there hasn't been a lot of, probably since Jeremy Moses was slinging it around, and maybe maybe a little bit after him as well. But certainly not in the Clint Conk era have we seen anything like that.
And that'll be a different dimension that there's not a lot of film on. I don't know that future opponents of SFA can take much off of the film yesterday, unless they think.
Other than Sawyer's pretty deep ball, because that was accurate.
Yeah, it was. He had a couple of really nice ones that were, caught by Pace or Gorey or. I think that and that's the other thing too. They spread it around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't locked in on first receiver. I think because of the rush, you had a pretty. You didn't have a whole lot of time to progress from one, first receiver to second receiver to dump off or whatever, and those are things that you hope you get to see more of, next week and as we move through, more level talent.
Yeah, so good things for sure. Lot more question marks. Some things that we may look on in hindsight as good things. We may be like, oh yeah, this guy's looking good. Remember back when he had this game. Gorey would be an example of that against Mississippi State. The couple just acrobatic catches he had. One, of course, the one we talked about that was called incomplete. The other one just shortly after that for a first down that was pretty sweet. Some good moments. Foster Sawyer converting a fourth and 15 or something like that. Tamrick Pace, who we expect to be a monster, I think he's been one of the most underutilized players this team has had over the last couple of years because he's so talented. That's an NFL prospect. But they had not been able to get him consistently the ball. And last night they gave him a real chance to go up against also NFL prospects in the corners that were on him. And more times than not, when he had a one-on-one opportunity, he was coming away with the football.
That's one of the other things that is really a potential positive for this team is they will run up against teams with a good cornerback, but not two pro level cornerbacks like that. So you think with this receiver core, if that offensive line can give Sawyer a little bit of time, I think we can see really those skill positions, and I still think that there's. At least two running backs, maybe three, that are really good. I don't think anyone stood out all above the rest on the running game just because there wasn't any room to run.
Yeah, I thought Josh McGowan looked good in his runs because he didn't have room, but he was turning out some power plays, and he was a guy that we liked a lot last year before he got hurt.
Yep,
and Jamal Shah, who may get the bulk. Surprisingly, maybe that Oglesby actually had the most carries last night.
No, and he didn't.
He didn't again, lost.
When there was any blocking, so you can't really blame the running back. You can't expect them to run through three or four 300-pound defensive linemen. But I think against more level talent, the running game, which really will open up that passing game a lot more. They got to the point where all they did is play off. And just didn't want to get beat deep. Yet you did see, the receivers able to get behind the defense sometimes.
I mean, listen, one of the most disappointing aspects of the night was the way the game ended, the drop by Frank Iheanacho in the end zone. And I thought he had a rough game. I think there was a lot of examples where he was in position and just couldn't make plays. And that was disappointing. I think there was one negative takeaway that would have been his night because he's got so much potential as a receiver. And to see that last night, especially when he was on their sideline jawing with them constantly through the night, there was a lot of emotion coming in and out of him. The corners kept getting in his face. I mean, it was, you could see he was reacting poorly to what was going on. And then he had a chance to shut him up there at the end, even trailing by, you know, 8 touchdowns, and it just didn't happen. But on the flip side of that, Josh Covey gave him a great deep ball.
Yep.
And there's another example of where that really could be a weapon for this team if these quarterbacks are playing this accurately.
Well, especially if you're thinking, you know, as a lot of people were when the transfer came, okay, well, this is a guy that can run. That's not just a guy that can run. That was a nice deep ball.
It was. And it's where, you know, in such a small sample size, it's almost not fair to say this. It's not that small, though, when you consider last season, that Jake Blumreich should clearly be the third quarterback on this list. And if he's in the game, you're in trouble.
I can't come up with anything to argue with that. and so, I mean, that's kind of where the situation is. And I know they'll evaluate that. But I think if you are playing a lot of either one of those, then something's really gone wrong. You know, because I think clearly you've got to ride this season with Foster Sawyer, who did have some glimpses of you know, being pretty darn good.
Glimpses, for sure.
Yep.
And that's the difference, is we're not looking at these statistically and saying, yep, this guy was better than this guy, because yes, I get it. Jake Blumreich was 2 of 6 for 8 yards with an interception. It's not like he played a lot. It's not like he had a great opportunity behind what was a dismal pass protecting against Mississippi State's defensive front. And the fact of the matter is that he was not in a position to succeed. But the eye test, you contrast it with what we saw from Covey and Sawyer, who also didn't enjoy great nights. But the biggest difference was Sawyer and Covey both looked decisive. They looked in control. They were accurate in where they were trying to throw, even where it wasn't completed. Although Covey's only incompletion was the deep ball that was right on the money out of his 4 pass attempts. And Blumreich looked skittish, inaccurate, and indecisive. And you can't have any of those 3 things when you're the quarterback, a starting quarterback, and he had all 3 of them last night.
Yeah, I think clearly we saw it. I'm glad they all got in. In all honesty, I think it is good to be able to see them in that, in, you know, with that type of, even, you know, even the third strings that they were playing against are, you know, probably better than some of the teams are going to be playing.
They're SEC recruits.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, you know, it's not all negative. And I really understand where sometimes a coach will get asked a question right after a game, and a lot of the, you know, you think it's a cliche answer when they go, well, you know, we're just going to have to go look at the tapes. We're going to have to go look at the film and see what happened. And really, my opinion softened on this game when I did the same thing that these coaches say they're going to do. When I watched it the second time, knowing what was going to happen, you take some of the emotions out of it. And I think it's way better to see that, and you see some of the positives. Yeah, maybe we were looking for some of the positives. You look for anything. But they, you know, there were a couple times they moved the ball. There was a couple times you know, they had some nice plays. And I think I see where you could feel like, hey, when we get into league, when we get into against some of these other teams, stuff that didn't work against Mississippi State's going to work against these guys.
Now, let me ask you this. Judging where we're sitting here today after a, you know, getting blasted on TV, do you feel better about this team than you did 24 hours ago?
I feel better about this team than I did 365 days ago after the SMU game.
Fair.
A week ago, I just thought there was not quite as much, not quite as I had hoped to. There was just some dumb mistakes. And yeah, maybe you expect that in the first game. You know, there's no preseason in college football, and so maybe. But I will say this: the dumb mistakes looked really fixable. It wasn't, you know, the offensive line. Now, if the offensive line has a game next week like they did this week, boy, then we got some big concerns, and that may
well
be
that
fixable.
Would be yeah.
You're assuming
Tarleton, yeah, that'd be a huge.
You're assuming issue. That the offensive line mistakes and not picking up blitzes and things like that is fixable. I definitely think some of the zone things and the defensive backs that we saw and some of the schemes, and like you said, maybe having out of necessity to play something that you hadn't practiced a lot or whatever, and you know, that's pure speculation, that looks fixable. And so it wasn't just a they don't have an answer anytime. Now, I will say this, if I'm scouting SFA, and believe me, I'm not, you know, giving away any secrets, I go play action as much as possible. It looks like things open way up when or I either run an option or I go play action.
Yeah.
Because you go play action, they bit too much on the run for that, and it left the passing game wide open, and they got to do something when a quarterback you know, rolls out in an option, because they got burned on that, you know, way too much.
Of course, some of that might just be the overcompensating for an offensive line that's blasting a 5-yard hole, you know, off the
every
snap.
Time. But, yeah.
So now I agree with the assessments. I will say this: we had different predictions for the beginning of the year. You probably felt a little better about this team than I did going into the season. So I walk away from this, as ridiculous as it sounds, maybe with a little bit of encouragement, because what I saw, the defense isn't going to be worse than it was last year. It shouldn't be worse than it was last year. And we thought they were pretty good last year at times. Offensively, they were just absolutely inept.
Yeah.
And I thought last night they showed signs of an offense that could functionally move the ball.
Right.
And to be honest with you, Foster Sawyer against Mississippi State, to me, looked more competent than Jake Blumrick against Sam Houston State. And
we almost
that's
won
not
that
even
one.
That controversial yeah. to say. I know.
No, it's not. But you're right. And we were right in that one. I mean, mm-hmm. and arguably, you know, couple bounces of the ball, you win that one with Jake Blumrick leading that. You think, yeah. You know, that, I think you may have even mentioned last week, what would that game have been like with a healthy Foster Sawyer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hopefully we'll see that. It was great not to see any, and we'll have to check the press conference when it comes out this week on injuries and things like that. But it seemed like they got out healthy. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've been at some of those games where I remember, again, I'm showing my age here, back when we played the University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we're in that game in the fourth quarter. You know, they scored two touchdowns in the fourth quarter that you know, pulled them away. But we were competitive in that game. And we had an injury to a lineman where he didn't fly home with the team. He stayed the night in the mm-hmm. hospital. And that was, you know, again, you always weigh, is that worth cashing that big check?
Yeah.
And so from, again, the eyeball test, from what we saw last night, it didn't really look like there were any major injuries. There may have been a lineman that was, you know, wasn't carted off the field, hobbled off. But we'll have to check that. Maybe that's just, you know, something they can get past. So hopefully you are able to cash that check and still come away with a healthy team. And then all in all, that makes that even more of a positive. If there is any positives of getting beat 63-6.
Well, and then the real season begins. So I don't know if you can count this weekend, although the home opener is always fun in its own right. Tarleton State thinks they're deserving of an FCS conference bid. I think I may disagree with that point, having some familial connections to that program up until right. a couple weeks ago. But
facilities wise, I think they actually, football facilities wise, I think they do compete.
They're okay. Yeah,
I think they're.
Yeah.
I mean, again, to the bottom end of the scale would be Nicholls, and Nicholls is a heck of
right.
a team right now. But they are better than the Louisiana schools.
Compare this, though, to the Texas schools in the Southland Conference, which are Lamar, Stephen F. Austin, and Sam Houston State. Their home opener last night, their big grand return to football, which the home openers are traditionally their best attended game, had less than 5,000 fans. They are way too close to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex to be considered a legitimate Division I program if they can't even draw 5,000 fans to their home. That's less than an SFA basketball game.
Yep.
So man, they seem to have the money to improve the facilities, and they want to contend on that level. Right now, if they were in Thibodaux, Louisiana, that'd be an okay night. In Texas, competing against FCS programs in Texas, that's maybe not going to cut it.
I as frustrated as I've been with SFA attendance to games, and I really think it should be way more. When you really look at it compared to the rest of the conference, it's pretty good.
It is pretty good. I bet you SFA is going to have roughly 12,000 next weekend. I'll be surprised if it's significantly lower than that.
And be a lot of purple. The Texans of Tarleton State are purple as well. And I think obviously you can't expect them to travel well. If they only get less than 5,000 to their home games, they're not going to be bringing
right.
truckloads of folks. But I think that we will hopefully know a little more about this team. Really concerned if they don't come away with a win, and somewhat concerned
we'll be in trouble if they don't. Last time that happened, they didn't win a game all year.
That's right. And what you got to remember, so folks who don't know much about Tarleton State and in Stephenville, they are coached yet again by Todd Whitten, former SFA quarterback, and I'm sure he's over it now, but felt like he should have been SFA's quarterback, or SFA's head coach when they hired Robert McFarland, and then went on to coach Sam Houston and coach at Lamar, and for the third time he's gone back to Tarleton to head up that program. So he will definitely be fired up against the SFA, is place where he played, and back in the 80s was a early 80s was a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Tarleton, you've got to come away with a win on this if you've got any hopes of doing anything this year, and I think they will. If you just go and Google, and you'll see that Tarleton won, scored 44 points and won last week against Delta State in their home opener. Not many folks saw that, as you saw, but a lot of folks may have seen a play or two on one of their plays made the ESPN top 10, and that's a concern that's that I'm sure is not going to escape Jeff Bird in the defense this week. Is they actually have a pretty tough receiver who scored a 70 and a 65-yard touchdown pass. And one was a short pass that he literally ran through five people to score, and the other one was running down the sidelines where he caught the ball in stride and scored. So, definitely your defensive backs and, your schemes have to hone in on this guy Manning, who is their receiver.
For sure. Although I'll say that if you go watch the ESPN replay you're talking about, might be a case study in bad tackling form as much as it is a great player, play the receiver. This is important to remember too, though, as we're talking about Tarleton, is they may be thinking that their Division I caliber is a program, but the talent gap right now between Division II and FCS is as significant for sure as the talent gap between FCS and the big dogs of the FBS conferences. Because think back to a few years ago when Stephen F. Austin played Commerce, who was at the time a national championship contender in Division II.
Right.
And everyone's conversation was, well, Stephen F. Austin's no good in the FCS, and Commerce is maybe the best there is on the Division II level. This might be a football game. And it wasn't. I mean, it was over by halftime. There were starters coming out really as soon as the third quarter began. So that talent gap is significant. And if Stephen F. Austin does not hammer Tarleton, it's not just about winning. They got to really put a statement out there. I'm not sure that you're looking at this as a legitimate team.
No, but I think that possibility exists. Is this a team? Well, you know what's going to have to happen. If they're going to hammer Tarleton, they're going to have to create some turnovers. And that's something you don't necessarily blame them against not doing against Mississippi State, but you're going to have to cause some turnovers. You're going to have to beat them on both sides of the ball, not just expect your offense to light it up every series. And now I think you need to see you know, some big plays. You need to see consistent running game, things like that. And you need to continue not to turn the ball over. And that's one of the things, again, if that's a silver lining, that was not a problem yesterday. They did not, you know, they didn't cough the ball up. They, you know, only had the one pick. And that was, you know, well after the game was decided. But you think if they can continue that type of control of the ball, then you're right, the talent gap, hopefully the size and speed difference. Do they have anyone that can cover, you know, the receivers for SFA? You know, we'll see. I don't know that they faced much of a offense last week with Delta State. And so you would think SFA would be able to move the ball. One of the things I was going to point out, Tarleton State scored 44 points and had two, but they had the two long offensive touchdowns, but they also had two pick sixes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't throw a pick six against Mississippi State, you should not expect to throw a pick six against Tarleton State.
You hope not.
So those are so I think the score numbers are a little inflated. Now, if SFA gives up 44 points to Tarleton, they're in trouble. But, you know, offensive, defensive anyway. I don't think that'll happen. I think that, you know, hopefully there's not a hangover after getting beat, you know, by a big score.
What has happened the last few years, if we're being honest.
Yeah. You know, that's a whole different topic that I wonder if we want to tackle sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth the check you get to go take a beating right off the bat?
Well, when Houston thinks no.
You're exactly right. They do think no. And I'm wondering about. I think you can make really good arguments both ways of if you're SFA and you're not winning the conference or in the conference championship every year, we play at an SEC school, we play at a Big 12 school, we play – you know, in Dallas, we play, you know, is that a recruiting advantage or not? Or
I don't know. Is it fun to get hammered like that? If you were making this a competitive game, even a non-competitive game, what Abilene Christian did against Baylor last night, that wasn't a competitive game, but Abilene Christian came away looking pretty good.
Right.
And I think that if you were able to do that or play teams like that, which is probably what you were trying to get out of SMU last year, then I think it's you're good.
Yeah,
you're golden. But when you're
South Dakota thinks it's worth it today.
Well, sure. Nichols certainly thinks
Nichols
it's worth
thinks
it.
It's worth it. Right. It's worth it if you are good enough to compete or if you've
or
you've
even to picked, look competent on that big stage. And SFA, for whatever reason, just has never been able to do that against these FBS teams.
No. Back in the day, I guess the first time they played SMU at Ford Stadium, they were competitive into the fourth quarter and mm-hmm. then lost it in the fourth quarter. The only other time during my days I got to go to, like I said, Arizona. We were competitive there. Went to TCU and A&M. Weren't competitive there. Is it worth it? I don't know. I guess, you know, Ryan Ivey could tell you because he knows how far that that check goes to funding the program.
Sure.
Right? And, you know, and maybe it is worth it. But it'll be interesting. Not over the next couple years because those schedules are kind of set, but does Ryan Ivey schedule? That'd be an interesting question.
Yeah.
Does he schedule Power 5 conference teams or does he – move more towards you know what Sam does and other ones and play FCS or below?
Well, you know, you definitely if you want to feel better about this weekend, you do to Tarleton what State did to Stephen F.
Yep.
And if that happens, I think we'll be talking this week about, hey, this team might be better than at least I thought. So, but we'll find out this weekend.
No, I think there's again, I'm not ready to throw in the towel. I'm not ready to change my predictions or anything just yet. You know, wish it would have gone a little bit. Wish we'd been a little more competitive in the first half, but at least it got better after that first 10 minutes.
It got better, then it got worse again at the end once starters came out.
Yeah.
But You know what? It is, we expected this. The only thing that we hope is that the positives we saw last night end up being tangible in games that are a little bit closer. And that, I think if we can, you know, ride Foster Sawyer's arm, which, you know, clearly the running game may be a little more competent after last night, but even without the running game, he managed to find receivers. I think, you know, this team has a chance.
Jumping off, you know, we had a soccer win. We had volleyball continue to look good. So there, you know, folks in Nacogdoches, you may see the purple lights lit up, you know, quite a bit. And mm-hmm. we just need to, you know, hopefully next Saturday night, Homer Bryce Stadium, the home opener, you know, football team will be able to light them up as well.
That's the plan.
All right. Well, we will be back with you next week to summarize and recap the Tarleton State game and look forward to the conference opener coming up. I think we'll know a little bit more about this team, but maybe not everything till after that game. So we hope you continue to join us. I think we had some good feedback, and a lot of you are back in the practice of listening to Purple Lights, and we appreciate that. Make sure you go and subscribe and follow SFA Sawmill on Twitter. And, of course, you know, most of you are picking this up from sfasawmill.com. But we appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
I'm Isaac.
This is Richard.
Axe and Jugs.
Axe and Jugs.